It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
3-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager!
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
It is time once again for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Welcome back. We talked about how big of a series this was on the podcast yesterday. The Mariners right there in contention for a wild card, trying to track down the Texas Rangers in the division. And they win game one of the series against the Tigers in very impressive fashion. We have all the highlights, all the reaction coming your way in just a couple of minutes. Also, a couple of really fun conversations coming up as well. We're going to sit down and talk with the president of the Baseball Hall of Fame. Jeff Idelson was in town, and we're going to chat with him for a few minutes. It's a conversation I think you will really enjoy. Also coming up, Aaron Goldsmith, a very unique perspective. He sat down with umpire Jim Joyce, and they talk a lot about Ken Griffey Jr. So that comes up as well. So a couple of very fun conversations. But before we get to the highlights, let's just look at the standings for a moment. Let's just take a moment to look at the standings heading into game two of the series tonight, because things are very interesting in the American League. You've got Baltimore on top of the East, Toronto tied with them. So Baltimore and Toronto on top in the East, Cleveland ahead in the Central, and Texas winning in the West. Texas, by the way, came from behind last night. They were trailing to Colorado going in the going to the top of the ninth, and they end up winning in Colorado. So they've won three in a row. Texas 66-47 now. You look at the wild card. Baltimore and Toronto tied in the East, also tied for the first wild card as well. And here's where things really get interesting. You have Boston and Detroit now in a tie for the second wild card. They've both lost two games in a row, and brushing up on both of them, the Mariners now winners of four in a row, 2.5 games back of both the Red Sox and the Tigers. And the Mariners have two more with the Tigers tonight and coming up tomorrow at Safeco Field. Houston lost again last night. They've lost three in a row. The Mariners now 1.5 up on the Astros. And we talked about it yesterday on the podcast. The Tigers coming in, they've been the best team in the American League since the All-Star break. Their offense has been red hot. And the Mariners facing, well, I think, the front runner for the Rookie of the Year in the American League. This was not an easy task last night for the Mariners, but Hisashi Iwakuma was sensational.
Next off on the way, strike three called. Upton is caught looking. Looked like a breaking ball from Iwakuma. Two strikeouts for Hisashi Iwakuma. He strikes out Justin Upton leading off the top of the second.
He ends up going seven scoreless.
A look in at the 2-2. Swing and a miss. He comes in and buries a heater on Zaltalamacchia's wrist. And with that, Iwakuma has spun seven scoreless. He's fanned eight Tigers hitters. And over Iwakuma's last three starts here inside Safeco Field, 21 1/3 consecutive scoreless innings for Hisashi Iwakuma.
That's a long time. The Mariners broke through in the second against Fulmer.
The 2-2 to Seager, swinging a ground ball up the middle into center field for a base hit. Cruz running third, being waved in by Manny Acta. Up of the ball, Collins. No throw to the plate. He'll toss it into second. Kyle Seager with an RBI single up the middle into center, scoring Nelson Cruz. And the Mariners have taken a 1-0 lead. The 1-0 to Zunino, swinging a line drive base hit down the left field line. Seager running third, waved in by Acta. Up with the ball is Upton. The throw in is going to be cut off by Iglesias. Around the third goes Martin. Mike Zunino with an RBI single. Scoring Seager, and it's now the Mariners 2 and the Tigers nothing also here in the second.
So 7 scoreless. Mariners up 2-0. They go to the 8th, and then the Mariners hand it over to the newest M with the coolest name and a big, big arm, Archimedes Caminero. And he went 1-2-3 in the 8th inning.
The set by Caminero and the 1-2 pitch. Fastball swinging a fly ball into left center field on the run. Norioki, he's there and makes the catch. And that will retire the side. Welcome to the Mariners, Archimedes Caminero. He takes care of the Tigers. 1-2-3 here in the top of the 8th. Throwing a fastball at 101. How about that?
He's got a huge arm. He can bring it triple digits. The Mariners now have 2 guys in the pen that can go triple digits. He's had a really nice run for the Pirates. He struggled to start the year, but he's really been locked in. This could be a big, big get for the Mariners down the stretch. You know, it's amazing when you look at what the Mariners have done with this pitching staff, trying to piece it together through injuries. Caminero, the 28th pitcher the Mariners have used this year. That ties with the most they have ever used in a season. They used 28 last year in 2015. Also, in 1999, they used 28. So that looks like it'll probably be broken before this season's all said and done. But all of a sudden, you look at the bullpen with Caminero, and you saw his stuff last night. He's got wicked stuff. His last 15 games with Pittsburgh, 17 and a third innings, 15 strikeouts, only 3 walks, and an ERA of 2.08. Opponents betting 213 against him. So you combine Caminero with the emergence of Edwin Diaz, who's been nothing short of sensational. You look at Tom Wilhelmsen, and what's amazing about Tom, he's actually given up more runs against the Mariners this year than he has given up pitching for the Mariners this year. He gave up 5 earned runs against the Mariners in his very first appearance as a Texas Ranger. Since he joined the M's, he's only given up 3 earned runs total. I mean, well, Helmsen's been great. He's only allowed 1 inherited runner to score. He's retired 13 of 14. I mean, it's pretty amazing what he has done. Retired 13 of 14 inherited runners. An ERA just a touch over 2 in his time with the Mariners. You look at Drew Storen. He's had some massive years as a closer in baseball. That first appearance as a Mariner where he gave up 4 in an inning and a third. He's got his next 4 outings scoreless. So it's really interesting when you look at how this bullpen shapes up. Nick Vincent is back as well. He was tremendously effective, especially against righties. So this is really interesting how things are shaking out with the bullpen. And, of course, there's Edwin Diaz, who came on to close down his 5th save.
Diaz fires away. Swing and a ground ball is short. Freeman up with the ball. The throw to first in time, and the Mariners shut out the Detroit Tigers. 3-0 here at Safeco Field. They win the opening game of the 3-game series. The Mariners have now won 4 in a row. They gain ground on the Tigers in the wild card. Holy smokes, what a performance by Hisashi Wakuma. Edwin Diaz with save number 5.
There it is. Mariners get the win. They take game 1 of the series 3-0. The Tigers scoring at will, seemingly completely shut down. Cabrera, 1 hit. Victor Martinez, 1 hit. JD Martinez, hitless in the ball game. That has been a middle of the order that so many teams have had such a difficult time dealing with. But Iwakuma, 7 scoreless, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 8 strikeouts. Here's what the catcher, Mike Zunino, had to say about it.
I mean, it's great. I mean, the guys are playing great baseball. We're excited. We're having fun with one another. And I mean, it's good to always be there and be in ball games. And it always gives us a chance to be in it. And we don't give up. And it's nice to get a run like this.
What did you see from Caminero after the first time?
Great. It was a lot better catching him than it was hitting against him in Pittsburgh. But he's got great stuff. I mean, the fastball in the upper 90s, his cutter is 94, 95, had a great split. It's one of those things where I think as long as he attacks hitters and stays ahead of guys, it's going to play, and it's another great arm we have.
Now, the skipper's obviously, Kumai, this 21 and a third innings at home scoreless streak for him right now. He's on a roll, and the skipper said he wasn't quite as sharp as the last time out.
No, he really wasn't. He was more effectively wild than he usually is, but I thought he really settled in the last maybe two or three innings, and his command came back to him. But, I mean, sometimes it's better against a good hitting team like this to work a little bit and have a little bit more life in the zone. I thought he threw the ball really well.
Something to watch, Mike Zunino, and we've talked about how good he is defensively. When he's caught this year, the staff has an ERA of 3.19. I just think it's interesting as we head down the stretch with Mike Zunino behind the plate. We've talked about how good he is framing pitches, how comfortable the staff is with him as well as he gets more and more playing time behind home plate. Ends up with a single to drive in a run as well in this ball game. So he does it on both sides. Very impressive stuff. Here's Scott Servais after the game.
No longer, you didn't have any power in that
bullpen. Yeah, we found some power, didn't we? Now, outstanding pitching tonight by, you know, starting with Kuma and continues to he's on a roll. You know, he really is maybe not quite as sharp as he was last time out, but really good at executing the game plan again against a very good team. And a ton of credit to him. And, you know, getting through that seventh inning is huge, kind of where our bullpen's right now. And, you know, gave Caminero a chance to get in there. You know, why not? You know, we've acquired him. Our people identify as a guy who could certainly help. So, you know, give him the opportunity, and certainly liked what I saw. You know, power arm, and then, you know, Diaz to finish it off. So we're getting other options, getting more options down there, and getting guys in a good spot where they're comfortable and they feel good about contributing.
Mentioned Iwakuma not as sharp as last time, but it's five hits, yeah, no runs, and seven hits.
I say that. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy I even say that. But, you know, again, just eyeballing it, seeing him throughout the year and where he's been at and how he executed and where he was at tonight. I thought last time I maybe a tick better fastball, but that was it. I mean, he's in a really good spot, a good role. He feels, you know, when he gets off a little bit mechanically for a few pitches, and he's able to correct it and get right back on. So, a testament that you don't have to throw 93, 95 to get him out in this league if you execute and make pitches.
A couple big hits there in the second inning.
You know, Cruz swung the bat really good tonight. You know, obviously scored up a couple balls, Seager, Zunino, and then nice to get the add-on run late. You know, we haven't done that often this year, but two-out double by Oki, and then Heredia chips in again. So, you know, contributions from everybody. He didn't kill the ball offensively. Their pitcher's good. You know, Fulmer's got good stuff. He's got a good slider, and he pitched our lefties tough tonight.
Get him some work, or are you going?
Yeah, you know, if Robbie knocks one out of the park there, we get up by four or five runs. You know, Nick will get in there. He's going to get plenty of work. Believe me, he's had plenty of work before. That's why he ended up on the DL. But, you know, just an opportunity. If we did pop one out of the park there, he probably would have gotten the game.
Aoki's been a different guy since he came back, then.
Very much so. I think just his aggressiveness, his at-bats, you know, he's made a couple mechanical changes offensively, you know, with his swing that has really helped him. You know, and he got pitched tough tonight, you know, and threw him some tough sliders down and in. But like where he's at, and he's got a different mindset than when he left here.
Martin, okay? TV showed he kind of grimaced a little bit.
Yeah, he had a little something, tweaked his neck or something. You know, Rick will take a look at it tonight and see where we're at tomorrow. But he should be fine.
There it is. That's the skipper talking about another impressive win. The pitching staff was brilliant. How about we hear from the newest Mariner?
Down here with the newest Mariner, Archimedes Caminero. And first of all, it was neat to see you come into the game, but also stay and watch the end of it. Why were you out there at the end?
No, because I want to see, I mean, we were in a situation that we were winning. I want to see the team winning. I have to work, but I'm going to work inside later. Like, it could wait.
You're part of a combined shutout in your very first outing. What was it like to come in after what Hisashi Iwakuma did out there?
Yeah, it's always exciting to come here, especially they brought me here with expectation. I'm here to help the team as much as I can, and it's always exciting to see your team throwing a shutout.
And be a part of that. Hey, you just got here today. You got a catcher behind the plate. Had you had any opportunity to talk to your catcher beforehand?
Yes. We talked during the practice. I didn't even before. And when he went out there, he was like, "Whatever you want, you just gotta throw and be confident and just go with it.
What did you tell him about what you throw and yourself?
Nothing. I say you got it. I mean, you, like whatever you want, I'm just gonna be confident on you because he's been here. He's been on this side of the league. I just got confident on him.
Put your hand, yourself in your hands of your catcher, right?
Yes, yes.
Hey, we heard 98. We heard about 99. We saw 100 and 101 today. A little bit extra today?
No, I've been throwing that since the beginning, but I feel pretty good. So I'm just going to give my best every time that I go out there.
Congratulations. Your first game as a Mariner, a pretty good one.
Thank you.
I would say so. That is pretty good right there. Mariners have some weapons at the back end of the bullpen, no doubt about that. And what a nice win for the M's. And now a chance to crawl even closer after taking game one of the three-game series against the Tigers. These teams will go at it once again tomorrow. It's going to be an interesting ballgame. 7:10 first pitch from Safeco Field. Mariners taking on the Tigers in game two. Wade LeBlanc will go to the mound. He has been just an ace killer since joining the Mariners. What, he's beaten Chris Sale. He's beaten David Price. He's beaten Carlos Martinez. By beaten, I mean he's been able to keep the Mariners around in ball games, and they've come from behind late, and they've won ball games. But he's been really efficient. Really starting with his first outing against the Cardinals, who went 6 scoreless in that ball game. Last time against Boston, I thought it was a really nice effort. 6 innings, 3 earned runs. I think you take that every single time against a powerful offense like the Boston Red Sox. So Wade LeBlanc will get the call for the Mariners in game 2 of the series. Going for the Tigers will be Daniel Norris, returning to the rotation after a month in AAA. Jordan Zimmermann went on the DL. And the Mariners seem to be catching the Tigers at a pretty good time because you look at some of the health woes the Tigers are having. Zimmermann going on the DL with recurring neck problems, so they will miss him in this series. Cameron Maben didn't play last night. He's been dealing with an injury, and he's been a huge factor for what Detroit has done. Started the season late due to injury with the Tigers, but he made up for lost time quickly in 63 games this year. Maben hitting .325, has knocked his stolen 13 bags, and he's already scored over 40 runs. So he's been a big factor in the outfield for Detroit. Nick Castellanos at third base has been a big surprise this year. He is creeping up on 20 home runs, as 18 of them, batting .286. With 23 doubles, still free swinging, but driving the ball. But he's on the DL. So a couple of big pieces to the Tigers offense on the DL, a big starter on the DL as well. So Daniel Norris will take over on the mound for the Tigers. Overall, 1-0 with a 4.85 ERA for Detroit. Another lefty that the Mariners will face. Norris has not actually pitched in the big leagues since Cleveland, July 4th, just pitched 2 innings in that one, 3 hits and 2 runs. He did pitch against the Mariners earlier this year. It was a 5-4 Tigers win. It was June 23rd. He went 5, gave up 6 hits, 3 runs. All 3 were solo home runs, struck out 5 in the ball game. Mariners try and take the series tonight against the Tigers and try and crawl that much closer against Detroit. So big game from Safeco Field tonight. Hopefully we'll see you there. 7:10 first pitch. Now, fun conversations coming up. First, we'll talk to the president of the Baseball Hall of Fame. Here it is.
Well, this is an absolute treat. Inside the visitors dugout here at Safeco Field, joined by Jeff Idelson, the president of the Baseball Hall of Fame. Jeff, welcome to Seattle. When's the last time you were at Safeco Field?
I was here a few years ago. 2012, I came out to see Ichiro play a little bit just before he went to the Yankees.
Well, you come here today with some more hardware in hand. You've got the plaque, Griffey's plaque. What has this experience been like so far with you, with Junior?
With Junior for the last 8 months has been great. I mean, this is a guy that I overlapped career-wise. I was on the PR side with the Yankees when he was breaking in with Seattle and have a lot of great memories of watching him play. I was at Yankee Stadium when he had his first home run takeaway of Jesse Barfield, so it's good to connect with him on that. And when you think about guys who are going into the Hall of Fame, you think about guys with numbers, but also guys with great character and integrity, and Ken fits that to a T.
You travel around the country.
you visit ballparks, you talk to people. What does Ken Griffey Jr. mean to baseball?
Well, he means a great deal, and if you take a look at his plaque, we explain that not only was he a great player, but this is a guy that had the ever-present smile, that he made baseball fun again, and really engaged the fans. And I think that's a big reason we had such a huge turnout at induction, is the guys that really embraced the fans, and he and Mike Piazza did that to a T. They come back to say thank you, and it's no surprise we had well over 50,000 people in our little town of 1,800 to say thank you to Ken and to Mike for a job well done.
Let's talk about Junior's speech a little bit. Rick Riz timed it. It was about 24 seconds before Junior began to shed a tear or break down emotionally a little bit. What was it that stood out to you the most about Junior's speech?
Well, you know, I think our PR chief, John Shostakovsky, said it perfectly when he said, there is no crying in baseball except on induction day. Very, very, very well stated. But I think the enormity of it all really hit him. And the fact that with both guys is it was evident that family was so important to them. And when they both started talking about families, when they got emotional, and both guys credited both their parents for the success that they had, and I think that rang true all the way through in Junior's speech.
What goes through your mind when you're watching Ken Griffey Jr.'s speech, all the Hall of Famers behind him, all the history? What do you think about when you watch that moment unfold?
It's unusual because, I have a pretty good view of it because I'm right there and I've been there long enough to know what it means. And It's amazing how every year it's the same where guys come in and say, oh, I'm not going to get emotional, and oh, I can do this in my sleep. But then when you stand in front of 50,000 people and behind you are 50 other or 48 other this year of the living legends of the game, you start to realize your career is over. And for a lot of guys, that's when it really hits. The knees start to buckle a little bit. I had that experience with Randy last year, with Frank Thomas, all the way back to Nolan Ryan and guys. And the enormity of it all really rings true, and you saw it with Ken and with Mike both on the 24th.
We're talking with Jeff Idleson, the president of the Baseball Hall of Fame. Jeff, it was not a question as to whether or not Junior would get into the Hall of Fame, but simply by what percentage he would get into the Hall of Fame, the highest percentage of votes in the history of the Hall. What was that phone call like to Ken Griffey Jr., not only to tell him, of course, he was in, but to tell him the historic event that just had taken place?
Well, our chairman actually makes the call, and she thought it went really, really well. He was incredibly excited. I'm meanwhile giving the news on TV on the MLB Network. So about 5 minutes before I go on the air, I called Tom Seaver, who I've known 30 years, and I said, look, I hate to tell you this, but your all-time voting percentage record is about to be broken. And he said, well, how did that happen? Who broke it? And I said, Ken Griffey Jr. broke it. And he said, you know what? Watching that kid run around our clubhouse as a little kid in Cincinnati playing with his dad, I could tell that kid had Hall of Famer written all over him at a young age. And if anybody was going to break my record, I'm happy it's Ken Griffey Jr.
You have such an incredible job. What's your favorite part of what you do?
Favorite part of what I do is getting to go to work every day, because I'm very lucky to work with the most talented staff in baseball and bring memories back to life for people who want to come to Cooperstown and relive everything that's been good in their world. And whether it's working with the Hall of Famers, being with our staff, seeing visitors in the museum, being out on the road, it's uncanny how everybody has a positive feeling about the Baseball Hall of Fame and what it means to them. And it's an honor to get to have the opportunity to work for them this time in my life.
Gary and I have had some spirited debates as to how the plaque traveled to Seattle from Cooperstown. We were wondering, did it get its own seat on the plane? Was this bubble wrapped and put in a carry-on stored overhead? Solve the mystery for us. How did Griffey's plaque, along with you, come here to Seattle?
Well, you know, a little mystery is not a bad thing when you're traveling with something that's one of a kind. So I'd rather leave the intrigue out there if I can. But needless to say, no, it never leaves your side. There is only one of them. I mean, if it disappears or breaks, it's not like there's another that can be made. So there's a lot of responsibility that goes with that. And if the plaque wasn't going back to Cooperstown, neither was I.
So that explains the handcuff around your wrist and the high security, the bulletproof vest all around us, I suppose. All right, so we'll accept a little mystery. That's fair enough.
Ichiro, just a couple hits away from 3,000. He has meant so much to Seattle, obviously, spending the bulk of his career here. And I know he has a special connection to the Hall of Fame.
He does. This is a guy who really, really loves history. And, after his rookie year, he came up to Cooperstown, and I think it was a lot more spiritual than he ever really thought it would be. He ended up winning Rookie of the Year in my office and kept that quiet for a number of years, and then he put that out there. And it seemed then like after every record he broke, he came up. So in 04, he came up after he broke George Sisler's single-season hit mark, came up again when he passed Wee Willie Keeler for the consecutive 200-hit seasons. It's been there six times in total now, and there's nobody who appreciates the game's history more than he does. Right now, as a 42-year-old player, he's become the ultimate teacher in Miami. He's still going, chugging along, but he knows he's got to tutor the younger kids. But in Cooperstown, he's the ultimate student.
That is such a perfect way to describe Cooperstown, New York, and the Hall of Fame as spiritual. It's like one of the greatest experiences. It is the greatest experience that a baseball fan can have. Can you remember your first time going to the Hall of Fame and what that meant to you? Of course, now, fast forward, you're the president, but it is really something that, especially that first time into Cooperstown, it is baseball heaven times 100.
No, I remember it well because it wasn't until later in life. When you grow up in New England, as I did, you tend to go north and south. You either go to the mountains or you go to the beach. So coming west was long after I got out of college, but I remember immediately just being mesmerized by how deep the history was and how passionate the staff was to share that history, and realizing that a lot of my life could be explained through baseball. And that's what we see every day with the 300,000 plus to come there, the 17 million almost to have been there since we opened in 1939.
How much enjoyment do you get seeing people walk in for the first time and looks on their face as they wander around and take it all in?
Oh, it's unbelievable how special a feeling that is, because what happens is you get people on the phone and they don't know what to expect. They think we're a gallery of plaques, and when they come to Cooperstown, they realize we're, really three entities under one roof, a museum and a library that chronicles the game's entire history, an education center where we bring in kids and explain to them how baseball and American culture have grown up hand in hand, and we're the Hall of Fame. And fans that come to the Baseball Hall of Fame come there expecting to see the past, and invariably what they find is their own past.
Somewhere there's somebody listening asking the question, how in the world do you get the job as president of the Baseball Hall of Fame? Can you answer that question?
I think they ran out of bodies. It was one of those deals. I've been there a long time and, just fortunate enough to be a part of a great staff there. And none of us take the responsibility lightly. We know we're the caretakers of the game today, and we all care about it deeply. And just an incredible honor to be a part of it. It was a great honor to bring Ken Griffey's plaque to Seattle for those that can't make it to Cooperstown, that didn't get to experience induction. And this is a great baseball town, and I expect there'll be more Hall of Famers from Seattle in the future.
Can you give us a cliff notes of a roadmap from you out of college to you as president of the Hall of Fame, the path that you weaved to get there?
Yeah, I went to Connecticut College in New London, Connecticut, majored in international economics, didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. 5 days later, I'm starting with the Boston Red Sox as an intern in their PR department. Spent 3 years in Boston, working in PR, marketing, producing their radio broadcast for a couple of years, Ken Coleman and Joe Castiglione. From there, I went to the team that I grew up despising, the New York Yankees, as their assistant PR director, started and then became their head guy at 24. Wow. Realized that it was baseball I loved, more so it wasn't just the Red Sox. A year with the World Cup when it came to this country, and the last 22 in Cooperstown.
Jeff, this has been an absolute treat. Thank you so much for the time, and welcome to Safeco Field in Seattle.
Always a pleasure to be here. Glad to be here. Can't wait to come back.
And now Aaron Goldsmith with umpire Jim Joyce.
Well, Jim, here we sit inside the umpires clubhouse at Safeco Field, and we are less than half an hour away from Ken Griffey Jr. being honored on the field here at Safeco, having his number 24 retired for the Mariners. And you and Ken, it sounds like, go back a long, long way. You really both began your major league careers at the same time. Can you take us back, your earliest thoughts of working alongside Ken Griffey Jr.?
Well, Aaron, 100 years ago when we started this, you always knew that there was going to be something special about him. It was always something special by the way he carried himself and stuff like that. That smile. He didn't adapt the turnaround of the hat for a couple more years after that, I think. I'm not real sure about that one. But there was always something you knew was going to be special about him. And Junior probably is one of the – he's definitely within – if he's not the top athlete I ever saw play the game of baseball, he's in the top two.
You obviously saw him interact with his teammates. You saw him interact with the opposition. How was he interacting with the umpires?
Well, this is a kind of a funny story because Junior stopped in the room yesterday, and just before he went out and was introduced. And so as we were walking out, I had a comment for him, and I'll just take it back just a little ways. Our first year, our rookie years, was technically my rookie year, but I'd been going up and down in the big leagues for a couple years. It was Junior's first year, and Junior was at the plate one night, and he took three pitches right down the middle, and I had to ring him up for strike three, and he didn't like it, and he turned and said something that you usually are not allowed to say to an umpire, and he was quickly ejected from the game. And so when we walked out last night, for all these years, he's always been saying something about that. And when I would say, okay, you know that pitch was right there, and Junior would always say one thing. So we're walking out last night with my partners. I had just told him the story. 5 minutes before that, Junior walks in, we shake hands and everything. And as we're walking out the door to do a game last night, I turned around and I said, okay, we're going to settle this right now. And he didn't miss a beat. And he says, you baited me. Just like that. And he remembers it a lot different than I do.
That must be always the case, though, between players and umpires, correct?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure that's what they think. And I know that's what we think. But that is actually – that was the first time that Junior had been ejected from a game, and I think he went another 12 years without being ejected. And, it doesn't say anything about the way he turned out or anything like that, but he always played the game the right way. And he always had a special relationship with my daughter because me being from Portland, when I was in the American League, we got to come here quite a bit. And I always brought my family up, and he always, I'm not going to say made a point of it, but if we were walking down the tunnel, coming into the locker room, he always stopped and said hi to my family. He was always very gracious to my family, which I'm sure he is to everybody's. And my daughter fell in love with him, actually. And he did promise to take my daughter to the prom, but that didn't take place.
And it sounds like there's a story not only concerning the Hall of Fame, your daughter, and Ken Griffey Jr., but you as well. You found a way to put a phone call into Ken and wish him congratulations on the Hall. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. I talked to our clubhouse manager here, Matt Walcott, and I asked him, I said, I know this is kind of crazy, but I want to congratulate Junior because he's the first player that I actually had his entire career. I'm talking about since day one and happened to be inducted to the Hall of Fame. And I think that's pretty special. And so Matt actually sent me Junior's agent's email, and we corresponded that way, and it was really nothing more than congratulations because, that's a pretty big deal. I mean, obviously we're here for the retirement of his number and stuff, but, for me it's kind of a big deal too because it's the first player that I can literally say since day one that I've been doing this game, he was inducted into the Hall of Fame, and I was here for every day that he was in the big leagues.
And it sounds like this is a pretty big deal for your daughter then as well, that Junior's in the Hall of Fame.
Well, she's wearing a game-worn jersey up in right behind home plate, and she's going to be in tears. I'll tell you that right now, because when she ever played basketball, softball, or whatever she did, it was number 24, and she fought to get it. And he graciously one night gave her a game-worn jersey, and it was the Mariners' 20th year. And it was also the Jackie Robinson anniversary year. And she has it on right now.
Jim, when you're umpiring, no matter where you're working that night, whether it be on one of the bases or behind home plate, are you actually allow yourself to be able to take in how great these players are? In other words, when you were umpiring, how easy was it for you to tell that you were watching what was going to turn out to be one of the all-time greats in the game?
I think we all pay attention to that, to be honest with you. We're just not participants in the game, but we're students of the game. We're fans of the game, of all teams and stuff like that. And we have the privilege of every single day watching these guys play. And when you see a guy like Junior, a kid like Junior, starts out at the age of 19, and you get to see him progress every year. It really is something special. And, yeah, we do pay attention to that. And there's some guys out there right now that are doing the same thing. I won't see the end of their careers, but there are some guys out there right now that are on the same track.
1994, one of the many All-Star years for Ken Griffey Jr. That was your first year umpiring an All-Star game. Any memories of that All-Star game, your first and Junior?
I don't remember. I remember the ending of the All-Star game. It was a close play at the plate. I don't remember a thing about Junior in the during the game or anything like that. I remember after the game, the after-game party, all the players and their families and stuff all gathered in the hotel ballroom and stuff, and Junior actually walked in, and he was actually being he was being shy is the best way to put it. He kind of stayed low profile, and he just kind of drifted off to the to a side and just kind of sat there, and you know, people were coming up to him and talking and stuff, but. It was a social event. It wasn't being on the field where he's so exuberant and everything like that. The social event, he was actually, my recollection of him being rather shy.
You were an umpire here in Seattle for the Midsummer Classic in 2001. It's one of the grand events in Mariners history, especially since the start of the new ballpark. What are your memories of the Midsummer Classic back in 01?
It was a top drawer event. Seattle put on a great show. The Mariners put on a great show. It was the new ballpark and everything like that. It was really, I've been lucky enough to do 3 All-Star games, and by far, with me being so close to home and having my family and everybody here, by far it's one of the classic events in my career.
Jim, this has been an absolute treat. You're so gracious with your time. You got to get out into the field. His number's going to be retired pretty soon. Thank you so much. This has really been fun.
Aaron, it's my pleasure. And once again, from our crew, congratulations to Junior. I mean, it's a great event, and it's more than well-deserved.
The 2-1 pitch. Swung on. Ground ball back up the middle. That's into center field. And Ichiro is on the board with his first major league hit. A sharply stroked shot right back up the middle off Miguel Tejada, the shortstop, and on into center field. So Ichiro receives a standing ovation. You can see the Japanese flags waving all over the place down the right field line. Something that I'm sure he has dreamed about comes to fruition here in his first major league game. He picks up his first major league hit, a sharply hit ground ball right back up the middle.
See you later!